Okay. Well, I guess I should introduce myself. I'm Carol Levine, and I am a representative of the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. There are between 40 and 50 million American survivors of child abuse. I'm one of them. Now, what happens with child abuse, 90% of the time, 90% of the time, you know the person. Because a lot of times it's family members, they don't want to talk about it, but we might as well talk about it. It was in my family too, with me. And I'm not ashamed to speak about it now, because I want to raise awareness that it happens many times, more than anything, in the family, okay? And then you have those like we give our children to, like the caregivers. It can be teachers like Sandusky, say, okay, one of those deals, and other teachers and so forth, or caretakers of other kinds, maybe babysitters. The Boy Scouts, they're finding out now, many years later, that there are a lot of kids that were abused in the Boy Scouts, and they've found records. They kept it silent. And now when the kids grow up, then all of a sudden they say, hey, wait a minute, okay? We do have something called the Statute of Limitations. We're trying to get that changed. Every state is different with the Statute of Limitations. That gives you, like New Jersey, I think it's like 2 years they give you before you can talk about your crime, what happened to you. You have to have good evidence and all this other stuff. Other states have more time, maybe 10 years. Other states, 5 years. They're all different, and this is bad, okay? Our justice system needs to be taken apart and done over again, because it makes it very hard. When there's a pedophile, okay, he might know that Colorado is a much more lenient state if he should get caught, abusing a child. So even though he lives in New Jersey, he's going to take off to Colorado because he's a sick you-know-what, and settle there. Because if he does get caught, he won't get nearly as much time as if he were out here, say. Okay? Now, this is bad. A lot of times, kids fall through the cracks. A lot of times, the perverts, as I call them, fall through the cracks because of our state laws. And I think with something like this, we should be uniform all the way throughout the country. That way they stay put, and we know where they are. And the parole officers could do a better job of checking up on them. Like on my street where I live, I'm from Phillipsburg, I know that there's two on my street, okay? They're not living there. They're just using it as an address. They're gone. Maybe they're out in Colorado. I don't know where they are. So you see, this is what happens. There's a lot of things that need to be changed to keep our children safer. And another thing, too, what people have to realize is, all right, it's 10% like stranger danger. That's it. The rest is, again, either in the family or in the school systems or churches. Look at the Catholic Church. I'm Catholic. Look at the Catholic Church, okay? I mean, with all the priests and everything, people are starting to talk up now. They're starting to speak out. It took a long time for it to happen. When I was a kid, if you got abused by someone, you pushed it under the rug, and you didn't speak about it because people were embarrassed, and you were just told to keep your mouth shut. Maybe you were even told that if you do tell, I'll kill you. I had an uncle who told me that, but I told. Yes, he did try to run me down with his car. That's true. But I don't care. I told on him. Did he go to jail? No. It wasn't taken to the court system or anything. But the neighbor beat the heck out of him. Beat him to a pulp. It made me feel good. But as soon as he was back to normal, what was he doing? He was still out doing the same thing. See, that's why you do have to tell the police, and you do want it, to go as far as it can. Put him in jail. Get him off the streets. Now, one thing that we do have, too, is something called human trafficking. And I want to really touch heavy upon that tonight, because people don't know enough about human trafficking. And the ones that do know about it, they don't want to talk about it. You see, there's this big taboo when it comes to sex abuse of children or anyone, as far as that goes. Now, my way of thinking is, and I'm a survivor, and I was abused many times over in my life by different people. My way of thinking is this. If we don't fight back as society, then they're going to be able to go and do whatever they want, you see? And they know you're not going to fight back. Most people don't tell. Only 2/3 of children tell, okay? So that's why we don't have totally accurate statistics. If the CDC had said that we had 850,000 children who had been sexually abused every year, all right? But now they're not too sure, because this organization says this, so that organization says that, and don't forget, 2/3 don't tell. But they know there's around that amount, maybe a little less, maybe a little bit more. And as the stats come in, it appears that it's more. So it's very hard to have a solid stat on that statistic. So what we're trying to do is to tell people to fight back. How do you fight back? You tell. In Ontario, in their school system, they teach children about child abuse from kindergarten up to grade 12. They teach them how to fight off people if someone approaches them, all right? And if something's happening at home, they have some place to go. They can go to a counselor who's been well-trained, or someone else in the school who's been well-trained, and not feel afraid. They know that it's okay to do that. We want them to do that. So in Ontario, if all the other countries, if all the states in the United States were like that, this is how you fight pedophiles. This is one way. Because the pedophile knows that, you know, the kids are not as dumb as they used to be. They're educated. The parents are educated, the good parents, and are going to care, the good parents. And this is one way to help fight pedophilia, because they know that if they touch someone inappropriately, or God forbid if they rape them, they're going to be told on. They know it. And that's one way to slow it down. Are we ever going to stop pedophiles? No. But we can certainly bring that number way down if we teach our kids, if we teach the parents. Parents need to sit down and talk to their children about the perverts in this world. But first we have to educate them so that they can. And I think it's a very good thing, you know, to start at a very early age. A lot of times when you're giving your kid a bath, they'll say, "Mommy, what's this? What's that?" Well, in the old days, they used to say, "Well, this is the coochie, and this is the, I don't know, the ding-dong." I don't know what they called pee-pees. The pee-pee, I guess. I don't know. That's not smart. I remember when I lived in New York, and I was kidnapped and raped. I was one of 14 that was kidnapped and raped. I was actually the last one. I had a very, very good picture of this car. I'd already been abused. I knew what was going to happen. But anyway, I was really looking the car over, and I was able to work well with the police. But the point is with this is, all right, they had everything to go on to look for this guy. But even though I had already gone through it, one thing I wasn't educated about was to stay away from the street. If a stranger says, "Come here, I need your help for a minute," you stay away. You turn around and run like heck, okay? You do that. You don't go to the stranger to see what he or she wants. And it can be a woman just as much as a guy. Now, when you're working with your children, and you're in the bathtub, you know, they're in the bathtub, and they're asking about their body parts, too often parents are bashful to speak about, "These are my breasts, this is my vagina," or "This is your penis," and so forth. They don't want to say those words to the kids. If they show embarrassment, then the kids are going to be embarrassed. And if something happens to them, they're not likely to go to their parent, because you see, they haven't bonded with them in that way, so that they know they can go to mommy or daddy and talk to them about what happened. And know that they'll be believed. 99.8% of the time, kids are not lying. Once in a while, they'll say, well, this kid was coached while they're in court. So they're fighting a battle between husband and wife, and they want the children. Hey, kids don't lie about stuff like this, because what happens is, what they do is they start acting out. They'll act out in ways that are much too old for them. Much too old for them. They shouldn't know about sex at that age. They're 2 years old. All right? Then they might start grinding. They might actually start doing things that are sexual. I knew of a kid that actually went up to a table and was rubbing himself against the table and making grunting noises because he had been sexually abused, was being sexually abused, and he actually enjoyed the feeling. Our bodies are made in such a way that they do respond to stimuli. It doesn't matter really how old you are, okay? So this is why they take children, traffickers take children, and they scoop them up, and they take them, and as long as they're prepubescent, they get the highest prices for them. They take them out on the streets, they pimp them off, in plain English, and children who go missing and never seen again, because they actually have about a 7-year lifespan. That's it. They are not treated well. They are not fed well. If they're sick, they're sick. If they're too sick, they will drop them off at the hospital, and they're like a John Doe or a Jane Doe, and they'll treat them, and they'll be, you know, either given to social services or someone will pick them up. But they don't ask them questions. And these children are back into the slave, being the slave, a sex slave. Now, I want to make something clear here, too. It's not just sex. A lot of times, people are kidnapped and groomed, so they're not kidnapped, and I'll tell you that in a second, so that they want to go. And what they do is they use them for, cleaning houses and cleaning hotels. Maybe they work out in the fields, stuff like that. The boys work out in the fields. They use them that way. Do they pay them? No. They just barely feed them. Now, that's being trafficked in a different way, in a different light, but it's still against their will. Anything that's against your will, okay, is abuse. With the women, a lot of times they'll say to them, you come to the United States and you'll have a better life. I'll make sure that you get a good job. And same thing with the men, too. And they believe them. Maybe they're living in a country that's really so disgusting, where they don't have running water that's right. They don't have the things that we take for granted every day. The minimal, all right? They don't have those things. So the idea of coming to the United States, they're smuggled in, and then they're sold. Now that's the way it is. With children and young women, many times more often, it's for sexual things. And guess what? Boys, too. It's not just a girl thing. There are many people out there that want boys, just as much as they want girls. Now, I have articles here where they say it's 50-50. It's kind of hard to believe. But the truth of the matter is, I would say there's probably 50-30, 30% boys and say 50% girls for the sexual, okay? Again, the stats aren't completely clear. This is a hard thing to keep track of. It's a hard thing to control. first of all, you have to realize that a person is, you know, has been trafficked out, okay? When you go to an airport, now here's something I can tell you. When you go to an airport and you see this guy and he has two children with him, a boy and a girl, if they're acting jerky and nervous, they're not allowed to have any, no paperwork on them. Even if they're going overseas, they don't have their passports. It's being held by the person that's taking them. They may not be dressed well at all. They're hungry looking. These are kids that are going over to another country that are going to be used for sex, okay? But I want to make it clear also, too, that we don't even need those kids over there because we have it right in our backyards. You don't get it, okay? A lot of people don't get it unless we tell you. I'm a part of NASCA. Again, that's the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we have all different kinds of people that come on our show. We have a talk show, which is called Stop Child Abuse Now. And if at any time you want to listen to that show, I'll give you the number, and you should write it down, and it's free. Write this number down. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, the reason why I tell you to call, if you just want to listen, that's fine. If you don't want to, you know, be a part of the show, that's fine. You know, you don't have to hit the number one. But this is where you get a lot of your information from, a lot of the education that I have. I have been on the show now for 7 years, and I've learned a tremendous amount about child abuse. I also thought that I was okay when I first went on the show, only to find out that I still had a lot of healing to go. Okay, we're recording this, and my boss is going to love what I just said. But I'm okay now, all right? I say that I'm 90% healed. Am I going to heal the rest of the way? I don't know. I still sleep with a light on in the hallway. I have a knife under my mattress. I got over my panic attacks, obviously. I'm up here. But I let it rule me for many, many, many years. I'm an author. I wrote a book called Panic Child, which is my whole life that I put into that book. Many children suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's not just the vets that suffer from that. Kids who have been abused suffer from that too. You get the kids who want to cut themselves. They try to commit suicide. I tried once. My mother was standing next to me, and she said, "Do a good job." I was slicing my wrist. And a friend who was living with us found out what was going on. She came and pulled me by my long blonde hair, which I had at the time, and she got me out of there. But a lot of damage had been done to my wrist. I didn't go to doctors or anything. Didn't tell anyone. But you see, kids run away from home. And they run away from foster care, too. Someone said that as high as 85% of the kids who are being pimped out on the street are a part of the system. They have at one time been a part of the system, or they're still a part of the system. It's very hard to find a good foster home, okay? I found a guest who was a wonderful foster parent, and over the years he had 35 children that were under his care, his and his wife's care. Now that was a good foster care parent. But unfortunately, there's a lot that aren't good. They can get sexually abused there too. So maybe they came from a home, dysfunctional home, where there's alcoholics, other drugs, and they're getting sexually abused, or they're getting beaten, all right, physically beaten, or they suffer from malnutrition, or they're ignored, or they're emotionally, you're stupid, you're ugly, you're fat, you're skinny, whatever, you're dumb. You're never going to amount to anything. That's emotional abuse. You remember those things as you grow up. Those words never go away. And, you know, so what happens is you have to get on your healing journey, which I started many years ago, and the church saved me in Red Bank. Now, I want to read some facts to you and some things to you because I want you to learn, and I do have videos for you to see. And they are really, really good videos. And again, I want you boys out here, you men, you young men, to realize that, you know, you are victims too. You can be. First of all, if you don't come from a good home and you haven't been taught about your body and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, if you don't have a good bonding with your parents, if you don't, then you are prey for a person who is looking for young kids, all right, and to be taken, of course, into other states or to go into other countries, and it's for sex trafficking. I was in Walmart the other day, and you know how they have the pictures up on the wall for missing and exploited children? I recognized one. And it wasn't shocking, but it was very painful to see that. She'll probably never be found again. Okay, now, it says here, what is human trafficking? And it's a modern-day slavery, that's what it is. It's exploitation of people and involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act. Contrary to popular misconceptions, human trafficking exists right in our own country. The Super Bowl. You guys, you look for the Super Bowl every year. You would be shocked at how much sex trafficking is going on. You see, people who have a lot of money, they come from different organizations, they have a lot of money, and they know how to go on Craigslist. The internet is wonderful, but it's also evil, I swear to God. Like Backpage and some of the other ones that are on there. Dark Web is another one. And don't go on Dark Web. Don't even go near it, okay? Just forget I said that. You don't even want to go near that. But what I'm trying to say to you is this. If you want to find a kid, you go to places like that on the internet, and you can get hooked up. All right? And so when the Super Bowl comes, what happens is you get a room, and you've paid ahead of time. You've met with the pimp. And, you know, you give them whatever monies that you're going to give them, and the deal is made. So they sit and they watch the Super Bowl, and then after that's over, they go to the hotel that they have gotten into, and they do their thing. They have the kid or the kids. And again, many times it's boys. So this is something we're trying to bring out and make awareness of. The man that I work with, okay, his name is Bill Murray. Now, he's not the movie star Bill Murray. But we get funny phone calls. Like I said, that's the telephone number I just gave you for the live show. And they think that he's Bill Murray. He's had a lot of fun with that. But anyway, the point is, he was a trafficked kid. And that person knew the family. He took him all around New York, and he was from New York too, to all these special clubs and all these special parties. And he was also very much into cameras, and he took many pictures of Bill. And the kid had to take his clothes off. He was a kid at the time. He had to take his clothes off, and, well, they expected certain things from him. But he didn't do it. Instead, they did it to him. That's what it turned out. And then after about 2 weeks, that guy took him back home. Well, he didn't tell on this guy, but he stopped coming around. After a while, he stopped coming around. And he didn't tell until he was in his 30s, I think it was, or 40s. And his parents were very old. They couldn't handle it. And that was the end of that. But that guy, because he wasn't told on the beginning, way back when, he continued probably to go out and do that, just like the priests do, just like the Boy Scout people do. And again, I'm Catholic, so I can speak. You know, just like any big organization, a lot of foster care, a lot of the orphanages, there's a lot of problems. I worked in detention center at one time. There was problems there, too. Not on the girl's side, but on the boy's side. And, I worked in Greystone. There was Greystone Psychiatric. It's not there anymore. But there were problems there, okay? Every place just about that I worked, there were problems. Now, one thing, too, these kids who are disabled, mentally disabled, they're really in trouble. Because the people that they work with, okay, say they're assigned to maybe two people to work with them. A young man goes in and he's assigned and he's mentally challenged. They're really at risk. And that's very, very annoying to hear that, very aggravating. I mean, here's a person who's mentally challenged. They can't fight back, really. And what happens is, you know, he gets sexually abused. So I'm trying to show you sexual abuse, and now we're going to go more into the human trafficking. They can be of any age, okay? It depends on what they want them for. Doesn't matter whether they're white, whether they're black, whether they're yellow, green, or orange, or purple. Doesn't matter. If they're available, they're available, and they're right there, and let's pick them, let's get them. And they take them. Not a good thing. Sex trafficking in which a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in any in which person induced to perform such act has not attained 18 years of age, or the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for labor or services for the use of force. That's servitude, and it's a DEBT, bondage or slavery. That's considered slavery. When you use them in the fields or over in the hotels where they're making the beds, they're not always just regular people in there. A lot of them have been trafficked to this country. Outrageous. Okay. I'm not going to go into this part here. In 2016, 90% endangered runaways. The runaways, like I said before, are the most vulnerable. 6% are family abductions. Someone in your family, this is disgusting, especially in the city, I've seen this. They don't know how they're going to get their next meal or whatever, so they start putting their kids out on the street. I spoke to a lady who had a nine-year-old daughter. And she said to me, well, she's 9 years old, time for her to go out on the street. No, it's not. Would you put your daughter out at 9 years old? That's disgusting. I almost punched her. I have a bad temper at times. But I made her get away from me. I didn't want to talk to her anymore. Okay. 1% lost, injured, or otherwise missing children. 1% non-family abductions. 2% critically missing young adults aged 18 to 20. You see, you don't have to be 6 or 8 or 10. My abuse started at the age of 6, and it did end when I was 17. What does this do to kids? It screws their minds up. I want you to write something else down. The bomb and the brain. Write that down. The bomb and the brain. There's a reason for this. It'll educate you more, almost more than what I'm doing right here. You see, my mind, my brain is not the same as yours. You were never sexually abused that I know of. They say in a room of 100, there's at least 25 to 30 who have been, okay? There might be one or two in here, you know who you are. But what I'm going to say to you is this. When a child is sexually abused, or physically abused, emotionally, or they're left to defend for themselves, they're neglected, what happens to your brain? The squiggles in your brain all changes. It affects different parts of your brain. So if you were to take an x-ray of my brain and take an x-ray, say, of his brain, you would see that our brains are different. Someone came to me and they had brass knuckles on. They hit me really hard in the head. And they wanted me to go to the hospital and have an x-ray. And I said, no. I didn't want them looking at my brain. I figured they'd find something that wasn't supposed to be there. All right. Of more than 18,500 endangered runaways reported to NCMEC, now that's an organization, in 2016, 1 in 6 was likely a victim of child sexual trafficking. Of those, 86% were in the care of social services when they went missing. 86% of those kids. So you see, they can be in foster care. That's what they're talking about. They run away because they're being abused there too, and then they're out. They're out on the street, and this is what the pimps do. Now I want to talk to you a little bit about grooming. It would take days to teach you what I know, and I don't have that. I only have about an hour of that. I have pages and pages and pages of information. So I'm trying to hit upon the things that you need to know. With grooming, this can happen with pimps who have it in their head to, you know, traffic kids, or it can be with pedophiles who want to sexually abuse kids and then keep going on their way. This is what they do. They groom a kid. Do you know what grooming means, any of you? Have you ever heard that before, grooming? Okay, say you have a barbecue, okay, and some guy moves in down the street. He's alone. But you kind of like get to know him. He seems like a nice guy. And, you know, he's out there mowing his lawn and you're talking to him. You have a barbecue. Let's have Bob. I'll call him Bob. Come over for the barbecue. Let's get him into the neighborhood. Nice neighborly thing to do. Turns out Bob is a pedophile. Of course, they don't know that. Well, they have four kids. And if he's out playing ball with the kids, no harm in that, right? So he sees one kid in particular. This guy likes boys. And he sees one boy in particular that he likes a lot. So he wants to be good to this boy, to get him to gain his trust. And this kid that he picks out walks with his head down. Because one thing you're going to find out about people who have been abused or people who get trafficked or whatever, they have low self-esteem to begin with. All right, maybe they don't get along with their parents. Maybe there's a lot of that going on. Maybe there's a lot of fighting in the house, whatever. But the kid's not happy. A pedophile has antennas, I swear to God. He or she can pick this up really quick, and that's the kid that they pick on. That's their prey. That's the kid they want. So he'll go over to the parents finally, okay, after spending far too much time with the children, because that's what they do. And he'll say, well, Jimmy, Jimmy seems to have a big interest in baseball. I love baseball. Let him come over sometime and we'll watch baseball together. Give you a little free time, at least one of your kids. Well, Jimmy goes over there. They think he's a nice guy, remember. And maybe he'll put his arm around the back of the chair. Okay? He'll put his arm around the back of the chair. And what he does is he starts really small to see what Jimmy will take from him. All right? This is grooming. Then he decides he's going to go out and get Jimmy a baseball mitt. Jimmy loves baseball. So he goes out and he buys Jimmy a baseball mitt the next day. He invites Jimmy back the following week. Hey, look, I got a gift for you, kid. Look, check it out. Let's go play ball. He makes friends with this child. And before you know it, they're at the park themselves. They're playing ball in a park. And before you know it, he's getting much more, doing more things to Jimmy. Not only is he putting his arm around him, but maybe he's going like this. Why did they have to do that in sports? Go like this on the rear end like this. I'm not sure I like that. But anyway, I don't know. But anyway, so he's doing this to Jimmy. Hey, good deal. Good deal, all right? You're doing good. And before you know it, you know, he's got his hands maybe in the kid's crotch. Well, the kid is shocked. He doesn't know what to do. The guy's got his hand in my crotch. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Okay. But then the next time he sees it, he might let a week go by or two. And he'll try it again and again. And before you know it, Jimmy, who likes the guy because he buys him gifts of all kinds by this time, things that his parents can't afford, before you know it, the kid is being molested. Really molested. Heavy duty. That's just as bad as penetration. I went through a year and a half of being molested at the age of 6 with a pedophile uncle. He tried to rape me, but I was too small. So he'd do other things. He'd get on top of me. He'd have me do things to him, always telling me that if I told, he'd kill me. Simple as that. Finally, I didn't care whether I lived or died. Go ahead, kill me. I can't handle this anymore. I couldn't concentrate in school. How can you concentrate in school? You know what's going to happen. And my aunt was a cold aunt, and she underfed me. And I could only bathe once a week in that house, and the kids started calling me Greaseball, you know? And my hair started looking greasy and everything. I looked bad. And the school didn't do anything about it. See, this is what we're trying to do, is work with the teachers. Is there anyone here that's going to be a teacher? No? What are you going to be when you're done? I don't know what you're taking. What classes are you taking? Yeah.
I'm a cop.
Was he?
A cop.
Oh, a cop. Oh, you should be listening to stuff then. Yes. That's good. You can learn. But the point is this, okay? Police officers have to be able to spot kids that have been abused. Sexual abuse is not easy to spot because usually there's no bruising. They may not have good clothing or stuff, but there's no bruising. They haven't been hit in the eyes or anything like that. Kids who have been physically abused, that's obvious. I don't have to tell you. You can see that. But it comes out mostly in behavior. I was once, when I was a child, a very bubbly, bouncy kid. Yes, my mother and father fought like cats and dogs. I used to see knives flying through the walls and, you know, in the air. They didn't know I was watching. I was the type of kid that would sneak down at nighttime to see what all that stuff was about. My brother would hide under the covers. He's 5 years older than me, but he got hit by my father. I didn't. My father was a raging alcoholic. So what I did was I would sneak downstairs and see if Mommy was going to get killed by Daddy. That's what I used to do. And one night I saved her life, I know I did, because of the black skillet, heavy black skillet. He was going to hit her in the head with it. And she was crouched like this and trying to defend herself because he'd hit her so many times. If I hadn't been there, I'm sure he would have hit her. I'm sure, because I went and I yelled, "No, Daddy, no!" And that was it. My cover was blown. He came over to me, and he shoved me against the wall. I felt like every bone in my back was breaking against the stairwell. And he walked out, and he slammed the door so hard that the glass pane broke into shards of glass all over the place. They divorced after that, and that's how I got with the nasty aunt and uncle while my mother was getting a divorce. So I went from one horrible situation to another horrible situation. Now, I went from a bubbly kid to a kid who became meek. Pedophiles know this. You have a way of walking. You've lost your joy. You don't have joy inside anymore. And when you're being sexually abused, you definitely don't have joy inside. You know, you may not know exactly what's going on, but you know that it's wrong. So what happens is, in cases like that, these kids are put out on the street, okay, the ones that are taken. Again, it's only 10% stranger danger. But the ones that are in the foster care, they're runaways. And then again, there are those that run away from home. And those are the ones that get caught by the pimps. Human trafficking is nationwide. It's in rural towns and cities and suburbs. It's all over the place. It's not just big cities. People have a misconception about that. They think that it's in the cities. It's right here in this town. You just don't know it. You don't know what to look for. And then a lot of times when people see things, they don't want to do anything about it anyway. Well, all right, I'm going to turn my back. Maybe the guy next door will do something about it. People do that. That's what they do. Okay. Oh, yeah. I have so much information here, George, that I wanted to teach them, but they're a little on the late side, so I can't do quite what I wanted to do. Let's start the videos. I don't care which one you choose. I can start talking. Now, what I have is a list of videos here. And these videos are going to teach you that there are boys, okay, that, you know, are in demand. And it doesn't actually show action, so don't get excited here, all right? But it's going to show, you can use your imagination. And it speaks in the video, too. Okay.
I'll just start
all right, there's a boy right there. Now, he was held as a slave. This happens to be in Romania. Big place for trafficking. They did rescue him and four others. The police try to go out and you know, do things like that. They do try to. And they're realizing now just how much trafficking that there actually is. So look at this kid. That's terrible. He's in chains. I can't tell how old he is. He's obviously a minor. They don't want to show his face. My guess is he's probably about 16 years old. That's my guess. We can go to the next one.
I don't know. I just sort of stopped.
It doesn't matter which one because I've seen them all.
Okay.
They're doing a lot of raids in Romania.
Oh, you want to talk about this?
No, I can talk about this one.
Huh?
If you pull it, let them see the picture of this little boy. Stop. This young boy was trafficked all over the United States, maybe even out of the States. And today, he is a journalist. He writes for the Washington Post. He's been on our show several times. So this is one victim that we know that was trafficked out, and he made a success out of his life. But he was like, at the age of five, you can roll that down a little bit, it'll even say, I'm sure that at the age of five, it started. Let me know when you see it. Yeah, there it is. All right, yeah. Since the age of five, I had been trafficked sexually by a pedophile ring. It was now 3 years later, and I was well-known and popular date for the sexual predators that my owners sold me to on a regular basis. Now, this is Jerome Lam, E-L-A-M. This is his last name. If you want to look up his story, this is actually his story here. But if you want to really look it up, it'll tell you, you know, what happened to him. And he's a journalist. Now he's fighting the rest of his life. He's fighting to eradicate, although no one person can do this, but, you know, prostitution, and things like this, sex trafficking. We do not call girls prostitutes, by the way, anymore. They're victims, and they're children that have been taken. You can call them anything else, but don't call, you know, like 14-year-old girls prostitutes. They have a story to tell. They're kids that are in trouble. That's what they are. Okay? All right, you can go to the next one. That's all right, yeah.
I've experienced many symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And I thought it was just unique. We mean boys are sexually abused in vast numbers and vastly more frequently than a society we're recognizing.
I was absolutely amazed that in
can
fact
turn that a little louder?
It's so common among
make it a little louder.
Sexual abuse survivors of feeling alone, of feeling it is only you.
I know that childhood rape separated me from my spirit. I thought I was broken most of my life. I struggled, fought, cried, prayed, and meditated my way back to me. While he was raping me, I felt like I left my body because I thought I was going to die. So I wasn't present, and actually I had agreed to die at that point. My girlfriend was just died last year. But she took me from my mom for about 3 months. And I don't think I would have lived if my grandmother hadn't done that. Like, she nurtured me and shocked me and brought me back to myself. because of my upbringing and just the pride that was instilled in me, I was able to continue to do so many successful things. I graduated from UC Berkeley. I'm a teacher. I've taught for 14 years. I've motivated many young people to be their greatest self. And even throughout my pain, I was still able to help other people work through their own shame and guilt and even denial about childhood sexual abuse.
He must have had my head on a pillow because I was suffocating. And it's not something that should be a secret.
I was 13 when the abuse first started. And he abused me several times a week for several years, all over this country, and even on a trip to Europe.
He began to take the same interest and do the same things with my younger brother, and that concerned me. And it definitely galvanized my absolute determination to send a message, to speak a truth, to help another survivor, without a doubt.
I've always thought that asking for help would make me appear to be weak or not man enough, but actually asking for help is the most profound act of kindness that I can do for myself.
There are so few men who've been abused who are getting help. It's tragic. It means there's so much more suffering than there needs to be.
I would call around to rape crisis centers and places that said they specialized in childhood sexual abuse, but no one had any place for men. And when I would ask the questions about men, everyone always thought I was a perpetrator.
A major part of my healing process has been in like fellowshipping with other men and trusting, you know, and being able to be vulnerable and to be close and not feel like I was under threat or that anyone would take anything from me.
This group has been beyond words amazing for me and my healing.
My coping mechanism for a long time was alcohol and drugs, which I think is common with, you know, men or anyone dealing with traumatic situations.
Until I owned what happened, it had been suffering up to that point. And then the pain of owning it was kind of when the healing started.
You know, I've had a lot of people ask me if, you know, if I'm gay because of the rape.
Rape is about power and control, it's not about sexuality.
Stop it right there. Now that's one thing that you guys worry about if you had been, you know, abused. In fact, the man that I work with, Bill, he was only raped by men. And he thought, well, why is it, so most of them were priests and there's that one guy that did take him off for 2 weeks. Why is it that, you know, only guys are coming after me? Am I gay? You know, is there something wrong with me or whatever? That's the, especially back then, there's just something wrong with me, right? So then what he did is he turned around and he became like one of these guys that would put a notch on his belt every night. He was going to show that he wasn't gay, okay? Because to him that was a terrible thing back then, all right? This does not make you gay. Because you're abused by a bunch of men, say, that doesn't mean that you're gay. You're just a kid that's in the wrong place. So there are kids that do, you know, question their sexuality. You are either gay or you're not gay, but it doesn't have anything to do with this. And so in his case, what Bill did was he, you know, started going, he had so many one-night stands. He'd go through so many girls and put notches on his belt, I'm sure, and all this other stuff. Just to show and to make himself feel like he wasn't gay. He's certainly not gay. But if you are, you are. But ahead, again, just like that man just said, that's not what makes you gay. Doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. Same thing reverse with a girl. That isn't what makes you, you know, a lesbian, say. Okay, let me put it on. Yeah.
At that time, when I reported him under New Jersey law, they were required to report him to the police. They did not. Had they,
the criminal statute of limitations would have still been in effect, and he would have been held accountable. But because they did that, he is a free man today.
Yeah.
Good morning, Senator. We want to talk about the initiative to move the statute of limitations, limiting the statute of limitations for crimes committed against children.
It certainly sent a very strong message to the institutions who are harboring and sex offenders.
Can you hear this?
And Mark's got to see others. I think we'll have a real impact in terms of protecting children in those institutions. Well, I think he has to be more passionate than
my freshman year in high school, I was always in the office for fighting and throwing chairs and just being really, really angry. One of the vice principals told me that they were thinking about expelling me from the school, and he said that it wouldn't even be any use because I would either wind up killing someone or someone was going to kill me if I didn't control my emotional state.
Well, I'm a forensic psychologist. I've been researching child abuse, and in particular the impact of sexual abuse on men. I started getting inquiries from attorneys who were representing men who've been charged with serious crime, basically all homicide. I met JT, I think it was 1994. He had been sentenced to death already. I'm not sure that I've met anybody who had a worse history of sexual abuse. JT was abused in other ways as well, psychologically, physically abused. But the sexual abuse was just horrific. What happened when you came in after the crime?
Wow. There's some kind of crazy tragedy in me that I've done to somebody else or I wanted to do to myself. This is my total failure as a human being to have taken a life. That's hard. I don't need no more than that. That's crushing.
I think there's a lot that you could say to young men who have been sexually abused, who are running from it.
That's what I thought I was the cause.
The reason why these people were sexually abused.
Yeah, I thought I was the cause.
One of the main reasons that I do this work is that I was abused when I was a kid.
Thank you for sharing. Well, we give each other strength, and that's what we do. You remember, that's what I got from you. I'm passing it forward.
Things normal men experience, whether it be intimacy with their own spouse or partner, whatever it is, it's very different for that survivor. A simple touch could trigger memories or flashbacks, and it makes it very difficult to have a normal, safe relationship.
I think it's important for people who want to have an intimate relationship with someone who's had particularly a childhood trauma, psychological trauma, to understand that what's involved is to enter into that journey with the person. It's not simply to stand near them and be sympathetic and listen well. It's really a journey that you will undertake together.
There was nothing more liberating. I can't recall a bigger step in my own healing than when I broke my silence and told my story. And when you learn to hope and trust and understand it's okay to be able to express yourself, even if it's something simple like playing with your kids.
I know now that if a child would talk to me about it, I know what to do and I know the tools that I have in place. But I think if a child talks to an adult about it, it's their responsibility to get help.
I was taking my life back. And I recognize it for what it is, and it was not something I did. So I have I don't have that shame. I've shed that shame. The blame belongs there, not here.
I think we have to reach out to teenagers and to young men in their early 20s and in their mid-20s, and we have to reach out to them in a very, very proactive way.
Men need that hope. And when you have hope, we'll heal.
All right, stop it for a second, please. One thing that when you've been abused, you always think, especially as, say it starts at the age of 5, I'll just say 5, and it goes on to your 14, and when you're 14, you can be a scrawny kid, or you can be a kid that's, you know, lifting weights or whatever, maybe not so scrawny, but you think to yourself, maybe I could have done something to stop it. You know, why didn't I try to stop it? It's never, ever, ever your fault, okay? It's never your fault. Because what happens is these guys, they like brainwash you. And oh, I know you liked it, okay? Well, of course you liked it, maybe. Because your body, you know, is another part of your body. That's another part of your body. And it's stimuli. There's no shame in that. The shame is the perpetrator that got you there in the first spot, all right, in the first place. It's never, ever, ever a kid's fault. This is my point. Okay, put it back on. Oh, this is a good one. Educational.
In the past 3 years or so, we've had about 245 clients, four of which were boys.
That's a small number, but experts say that's not an accurate representation of reality when it comes to human trafficking among boys and men.
You know, growing up, you know, you're told to be a man, you know, don't cry, don't share your feelings. And so if a boy to work come forward, or a man possibly come forward to talk about his story, there's a lot of shame associated with that.
According to a group called ACPET USA, ending child slavery at the source, about half of human trafficking victims, both sex and labor, are young boys and men. But experts say still not many people know that both men and women can be trafficking victims.
We often hear, oh, that doesn't happen here. Oh, that's not a problem in our community. But once people know how to identify trafficking and they start to recognize the signs, suddenly they say, oh, that's actually happening here.
And resources can be hard to find.
The issue you ran into is there's limited resources. There's limited housing options for them. There's limited care, like, you know, right now even you have, you know, mother-baby homes or women's homes that it's easier for a girl or a young lady to stay there. But for boys, they don't fit the demographic of current availability of shelter space.
However, one organization in North Carolina is trying to change that.
So welcome to the Anchor House.
Restore One built a safe home in Greenville to help boys between 12 and 18. It's set to open late spring.
So they're going to be homeschooled here at Anchor House?
The hope is this will open up more opportunities for victims to come forward and for the community to reach out and help. In Charlotte, Fusion Show, Time Warner Cable News.
Now, there's a lot of problems in all the states. Some states have more problems with pedophiles. Other states, more problems with the trafficking. It's everywhere. And that's one thing that I wanted to get across to you tonight, because, you know, people, if you hear about human trafficking, you think, well, that's over in China or someplace over in Asia, whatever. But no, it's right here. And many times those people are brought here, okay? And that's what we have to understand. And then, yes, we send our own people, our own children over there. It's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Whoever's got the money. And remember, the internet is a bad place to be, especially for children. I don't know if any of you are old enough there to have any children. Does anyone have any children here? I mean, I know you do, George. I didn't think so. Okay. But someday you will have kids, all right? You will. And you better stand over them when they're on that internet, because kids today are smarter than adults when it comes to the internet. They learn things really fast. And many times they know where those nasty sites are. You have to be careful. The children of today and the children of tomorrow, if we don't get a better grip, a better handle on what's happening to our children today, remember, the children are our future. If we don't, you know, fix certain things and with the Justice Department and other things like that, for instance, one time sex offender gets caught. Does that mean that he only offended once? No. He got caught. He might have had 15, 20, how many? You know, how many kids? And another thing I want to leave you with, because I know it's late. Do I have time or what? What time? What time is it? I have 20 minutes? Okay. If I put my glasses on, I would have seen that myself. But anyway, the point is, if we don't teach our children today what's right, what's wrong, if we don't tell them about their body parts, and if our school systems don't start working with the parents, then our kids are going to continuously be abused. Over, like I said before, over in Ontario, they have it in the school system. They're way ahead of us. And there's less crime. They've done their surveys. They've done everything. And they realize that the crime rate, the sexual crime rate, has gone down. And this is why I say, if the pedophiles, and believe me, they know a lot, these pedophiles, they're not dummies. They come from all walks of life, as you well know. They can be teachers, they can be priests, they can be counselors, they can be counselors, they can be cops, They can be anything, any walk of life. If you're a pedophile, you're a pedophile. And if we don't teach our kids about these people out there and what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, I'm speaking about behavior from adults with children, then kids are going to be prey. Okay, and I mean that as P-R-E-Y, okay, prey. So does anyone have any questions they want to ask?
I think the other class, their class has to go at 8:30, so.
So we have to stop?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, that concludes what I have to say tonight. I'm thankful that you guys showed up. I would like to have 1,000 people here so I could give out all the information that I have. I tried to hit some key notes here, things for you to walk away with and remember and think about. Okay? So, thank you very much. And thank you. Thank you. And I'm going to clap for you for coming, because not only do you get an extra grade, but you also get a little more education in your brain, which you need, okay? Okay.
Tomorrow.